Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on a Wednesday, ESPN Las Vegas. Good show coming up. Unexpected topics. I hit the road a little earlier than I normally do today. I was driving around listening to some college sports radio, and those folks were thrown for a loop. Didn't even know what to say about Michigan and Sharon Moore. If you're just tuning in, a big national story, arguably one of the top five college jobs. Michigan on the outside looking in with the CFP. Still had a good season. Mm-hmm. Still have a bright future, but it won't be with Sharon Moore as he's been fired. We'll investigate some of the details on this, but they're saying with cause. I think this was the game plan for the last year and a half, but I won't speak on it until I hear some more details. John, how are you? John Von Tobel's here.
I was waiting for my introduction. I'm doing great, Steve. Absolutely fantastic.
I just like to talk. Go right into it, man.
I haven't been around for a while. Maybe people don't know who I am.
I don't even know who's on the show anymore. It's all about ESPN, the brand. ESPN Las Vegas. ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, yes, I am a nameless entity, a vessel only to be served for Lotus Broadcasting and ESPN Las Vegas.
John, of course, is in from VSiN. He does our Saturday show, JVT Saturday football preview, over at the Westgate.
Which, by the way, we'll have on this Saturday.
You have a bunch coming up, right?
Yeah, I think we are on. Don't quote me on this, because over the weekend on Saturday, I announced a bunch of dates that I thought we had agreed to. And then Patty came in, one of our salespeople. No, but actually the good thing was, like, we might have more.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I thought it was going to be disjointed. But for sure, join me this Saturday, and then whatever cometh after.
Big Army-Navy preview and an hour. No, you only do 1 hour, so half an hour on Boise and Washington and the LA Bowl.
No, an hour of Army-Navy.
Okay.
Like, that's all we're going to discuss.
Well, I mean, there's so much college football to get into, and obviously there's a look ahead to the playoffs, which we'll get to, bowl game look ahead as well. But this is a massive story because I actually think it's a story in the NFL as well, and there's an overarching theme here about coaches going bye-bye at the last minute, schools telling coaches to go buzz off at the last minute. Again, we don't know the exact reasons for Sharon Moore. We're hearing inappropriate relationship, but I want to wait on that for a couple hours to see what comes through here. But what we do know is – one of the biggest jobs in college football is now open, which means there's going to be chaos somewhere else in college football, or I don't think it's going to be an NFL head coach going to Michigan, but there could be people with NFL experience considered. You were telling me that the show before us was thrown for a freaking loop. They couldn't come up with anyone, and when they did settle on someone, they actually were talking about who?
John Gruden, of course. He's going to dive right into one of the best jobs in the country. That's going to be his first step back. It's going to be in college, and it's going to be with Michigan, who won a national championship 2 years ago.
Do we have a different perspective on Gruden because he was here? Like, we had the up-close look to John Gruden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think back to what he was before the NFL and Goodell did him in and screwed over Mark Davis. Kind of screwed over the Raiders because it sent him into this tumultuous period. But what he was doing with coaching, personnel judgment, was John Gruden a great NFL coach when he was here?
No. That to me is everything off the field aside and who he is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that he was ripping off 13-win seasons with regularity and having his teams compete in conference championship games and on the cusp of greatness.
Yeah.
But instead, what it is he's a character. When you leave the limelight, you're fondly remembered.
Yep.
And I love watching him open big boxes of stuff, and I like watching him get Vinny Testaverde to do a hard count on a blog and all these sort of things, when the reality is the production met nowhere near what the actual respect is, and I don't understand why that's there.
I remember people being frustrated with where the Raiders were, and certainly their drafts were terrible, and we didn't realize how bad they were until the years after, when – now you're in a situation with the Raiders where they have almost no building blocks from the Gruden-Mayock era because their drafts were terrible. Max Crosby, nice job. This current regime just booted a lot of the other guys that they picked who have turned into pretty decent NFL players. But at the top of the draft, they were terrible. Now, college football is different. But is it? It's kind of getting closer to the NFL. You go and buy players, and a lot of what you do is in the transfer portal. Now, at Michigan, I don't think they can do as much transfer portal. They have unlimited funds. But in the end, John, it comes down to personnel evaluation. And if you couldn't draft guys who had 3 and 4 years of college experience, how are you going to put together a college team where you're judging high school recruits and other college players who've been in the game for 1 and 2 years? So that would be one of my worries. And the other one is what he said to get fired. That's a problem. And the expectations for Michigan are not of desperation.
No.
I think John Gruden looking for a job is a little bit of desperation. I'm sure he's doing fine. He's got lots of money. He doesn't need the money. But isn't he in the running for UConn?
Mm-hmm.
When I saw that, I was like, I don't know. And then we have an ESPN national show saying he should be up for the Michigan job. When you and I are like, I don't think he could do the UConn job. Are we missing something here?
No, of course not. I mean, there's also a reason why Arkansas's head coach is not John Gruden. It's Ryan Silverfield, right?
That's another great point, because how many people told us he was going to get an SEC job, and the SEC went all American Conference,
yep,
not John Gruden.
They all passed. Every single one of them passed. And yet, to your point, this program, wow, which has lofty expectations, which, as you alluded to, even before this happened, Mr. Moore was probably thinking that this dude had maybe one more year and we're going to move on. It had been disappointing under Moore because they were just coming off of a national championship and didn't achieve anything near competing for another one in the time that he was the head coach. So the grab here was going to be, let's grab the disgraced head coach who's going to make his first foray here and forever into coaching and into college coaching. Doesn't make any sense.
So our rep job is done. Okay, he's not a candidate. I'm going to call it the bottom of my list because these are long shots at unbelievable jobs who they could call, they could reach out. Now, I wouldn't put out a list and then have, like, these 11 guys turned us down. This is, hey, you know what, make some calls.
But can I real quick before you read? Mm-hmm. This is one of the few programs that can do that. You know, you see all the time some of these programs will fire folks, and you'll see these fans go, you know, UNLV basketball back a few years ago when there's a vacancy. Like, let's go call this guy that's employed and making $7 million a year. Like, no, that's – sorry, the brand isn't there. This is one of those you can at least get somebody to
they
pick
can call
phone.
Anyone anybody. In the country.
Yes.
Literally anyone.
They'll be heard.
Yeah. I'm trying to – I mean, I guess not Ryan Day.
And maybe Dan Lanning just because of the money there.
Hmm. Okay, Dabo Sweeney.
I don't know why you'd want them, but yeah.
They're not in the in-group.
Yeah.
The ACC clearly got smacked around, disrespected. He seems to be growing tired of the expectations at Clemson and a lack of gratitude.
The game also seems to have passed him by, though. I don't think Michigan wants
He supposedly is going to embrace the portal more.
We heard that last year.
Steve Sarkisian.
Okay.
I mean, there's whispers that there's something going on in Texas. He clearly... reached out, he didn't, but a rep reached out to the Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come from nowhere. And you say Lanning's out.
I would say that that's a program with some pretty solid like money backing. He's already in the Big Ten. I mean, I don't know why he would want to move. I mean, dare we say, is that a lateral move for him?
Another school that you basically can't match their money, even with Larry Ellison's billions, because mm-hmm. this corporation is bigger. I like the character match, Kalani Sitake. I know Penn State made a run.
Crumble cookie. Can't get it done.
Make him spend more of it.
Yeah. I think he'd be great.
I think he'd be a really good coach in Michigan.
He's a really good coach. Like you said, he fits everything they want. I feel like your head coach needs to be a former fullback.
Okay.
Which is what Sitake was.
Kurt Cignetti.
I'd call.
It's another level. I know they're funding them, but it's still like you go into households and I mean, even if they win a national championship, you could be like, let's go to Indiana. Michigan called.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's Michigan. You're Indiana. Okay. So those are some long shots, probably not likely. And the other one that's been mentioned a bunch. I mean, if he's available in 2 weeks, Kalen DeBoer from a regional match, he's a Midwest guy.
I don't think that's
not a southerner.
I don't think that's the long shot category. I think that's whatever category is after long shots. Like okay. Yeah, maybe. You know, if he loses, like you said, he's a Midwest guy. If he loses this game, obviously he has ties to the conference because he was Indiana's offensive coordinator, quarterback coach for a while, thus the connection to Penix and all that that we saw in Washington. I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world that if they flame out and lose in 2 weeks to Oklahoma, that he's like, yeah, I think I fit better in that area of the country.
I've got 10 more names. Michigan job is open. Sherron Moore, if you missed it, got fired about 2 hours ago. It was announced for cause or with cause. This Michigan job is an awesome job, and it's going to create upheaval around college football, maybe the NFL as well. I did put Dan Mullen on the list. I have him about 14th. I think he would do a great job there. I don't know why he would be 14th. He probably should be back in the fold for a lot of these jobs, but maybe he needs another year at UNLV before he'll have to answer the question, hey, do you want to make $10 million a year with a $50 million buyout? I don't know that that came along this time around, but I bet you if they have a big year next year that jobs like this are going to be calling. But we'll go through my list. John's got some names as well. We're going to get to VGK on this East Coast swing here in just a couple minutes as Ryan the Hockey Guy is coming in. More reaction on the CFP. Old Man Rivers is back, and people are saying best shape they've ever seen him in, but we have the pictures, and it doesn't look that good.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We'll get back to all the college football, some Raiders coming up, college basketball as well. John Montobel's in from VSIN, VSIN 1230 The Game, and of course, he's the host of the JVT Saturday Football Preview Show. Ryan the Hockey Guy is over on 1340 and 98.9 FM. We have a lot of stations here, a lot of good programming. Of course, VGK Insider Show is every day, Monday to Friday, and Ryan covers the Golden Knights. Last night, well, this trip's been interesting. We talked to you last week, and it was like, man, this trip's going to be really tough. Remind me if you said this, because I think I asked you, most interesting game, toughest game on the trip was going to be?
The Islanders.
You said the Islanders.
Yeah.
And it turns out, it's not like the Islanders, you know, won 14-2, but it turned out to be a really tough game with a lot of storylines, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at it from a couple of different perspectives. The Golden Knights had a 2-0 lead with a minute left in the first period. When this team is on, when they are playing well, they make that automatic. They find a way to extend that lead. They don't allow a team to come back the way that the Islanders did. And, you know, the Islanders, Matthew Schaefer, 18-year-old defenseman, he just continues to shine in those moments. It was a great game for Bo Horvat. Ilya Sorokin, a bit leaky. So the Golden Knights were able to, you know, salvage a point out of it. But, you know, the larger thing for me, when you look at this road trip, the starts have been great. First periods have been awesome. Second periods is really where things kind of fall apart for the Golden Knights.
In the shootout, what happened?
They just couldn't hold on to the puck. I mean, it's rare that that happens to one guy, let alone three of them. Like, you know, Jack Eichel gets a shot on goal, but Mitch Marner loses it right at the end result. And then, you know, Shea Theodore, it's very, very rare for Shea to kind of mishandle a puck in that spot. But boy, oh boy, it wasn't a great showing.
I saw someone on the Twitter machine say that the ice sucked. Is that an excuse?
I mean, not really. You know, like, you think about it from the other perspective, the Islanders are playing on the same ice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're going down different angles. But at the same time, like, listen, if the ice is bad, don't make a move. Mm-hmm. Force a goaltender to make a save. At least force them to make a save rather than just losing the puck into the corner and not forcing Sorokin to do anything.
That was a big storyline of the Cup Finals, right, with Florida in that environment. You get that choppy ice or that soft ice. It was allegedly an advantage.
Well, it's an advantage for Florida because they're north-south, right? And you got Connor McDavid, the handles that he has, Leon Draisaitl. They're looking for seam plays. They're looking for, you know, the more finesse type of hockey that they're used to. And when you can't do that on that ice, it becomes a little bit limiting. But at the same time, if you're in the Stanley Cup final, figure it out.
Wait, has this been a storyline with the Florida playoff and cup runs that teams haven't adjusted well to the mushy ice?
Yeah. It's been somewhat of a storyline. Like, it's not one that I buy, right? Because, sure, like, you know, the Golden Knights, they handled it. They did fine in Florida. You have to adjust your game. You have to adapt to what is in front of you. And, you know, you can only do so much when it comes to ice conditions in June and humidity in Florida. But both teams are playing on it. And that's the reality of the situation.
Wow. So Florida's had a big run. Tampa had a great run.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Last year, the storyline came up. Was it Bissonnette who wanted to talk about the tax implications and what an advantage it was in Florida, and then Gary Bettman shut him down? Mm-hmm. Has Bettman escaped the crappy ice in Florida?
Seems
narrative.
Like it. Well, yeah, because I think it's just it's sour grapes. It's excuses, right? Like again, it to me, you're there for a reason. You figure out different ways to win. You know, the team that ends up winning the Stanley Cup isn't the team that's going to be able to play their game in every single game throughout their run or against every different opponent. You have to adjust. You have to adapt. And it's not like the Oilers did that much better on home ice. Like, they got rolled in a lot of different ways the second time around playing Florida.
So prior to the loss to the Islanders, they're on this little run. The Knights are. What was a big change? Goaltending, I saw, that kind of stuck out here. Was that like a big difference in these four games they won prior to the loss?
I think goaltending's been a story for sure. You know, you get Carl Lindbom's first win in the game against San Jose, and then you get Carter Hart, his debut. I thought Hart against Chicago grew into the game, and then obviously overtime in the shootout is where he shined. And then, you know, Akira Schmid going back home to play the New Jersey Devils is the first time he had played his former team. The shutout was nice, but it was a pretty good top-to-bottom effort from the Golden Knights defensively in front of them. You know, and then I think you look at the Ranger game again. Carter Hart didn't have anything to do in the first period. The Rangers had 4 shots on goal in the first, 3 shots on goal in the third, but they had 16 in the second period. And even though the Golden Knights fell behind 2-1 after that second period, Carter Hart was excellent. So goaltending has been moving in the right direction, but I'd also say team defense and getting closer to a 60-minute game. No team's going to be perfect in that regard, but the Golden Knights are a little bit more consistently a 35-40-minute team, and when you get there, you can win a lot of hockey games.
Let's go back to the Islanders. They're 5-0 now against the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how good are the Islanders?
Well, if they were in the Pacific Division, they'd be amazing.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I think they're legitimately good. Now, they're dealing with some injuries. Kyle Palmieri is out for the season. Alexander Romanov also out for the season. But, you know, I think a lot of it hinges on Matthew Schaefer. It's not often you'll see an 18-year-old defenseman come into the league and be as gifted and as talented as he is. And the way that I kind of describe it is he's got the green light to go. There aren't a lot of coaches that are going to let an offensive defenseman at 18 years old do what they want to do in the offensive zone. It's much more about take care of the neutral zone. Don't do anything too risky. Defense is where you're going to make your hay. But Matthew Schaefer's too good. And the Islanders are a team that's able to find seams in the offensive zone. They're better in the neutral zone. They're not anti-hockey. They don't sit back and counterpunch anymore. They use their speed to their advantage. I like them a lot. Do I think they're a playoff team? Probably not. But I think they're close to a playoff team at the end of the year. Like, I think they play meaningful games down the stretch.
Ryan Wallace is with us, Ryan the Hockey Guy, pre and post, and host of the VGK Insider Show. Give me a grade for Carter Hart. He took his first loss last night. Overall grade so far through 4 games?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're probably looking at like a B for Carter Hart. I think that there have been, you know, certainly tremendous moments for him. The overtime against Chicago was excellent. Just absolutely excellent. The second period against the Rangers, really, really solid. Last night, the Simon Holmstrom goal, it's, you know, kind of staring at the guy. It's one of those goals you'd like back. Of course, he does his job in overtime. He also does his job in the shootout. If you can get one of your guys, two of your guys, to just put the puck in the back of the net. So I think overall it's been really solid for Carter Hart, better than I thought he would be. I assume there'd be more rust on his game. Hasn't really been the case to this point.
I would assume they're going to give him a crack at his old team?
Yeah, I don't know.
Coming
I'm not
up,
sure.
Right?
I mean, listen, I think that it makes sense, right? Yeah. Because Akira Schmid wanted the Devils.
Yeah.
And you give the Devils to Akira Schmid. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at Schmid. If he doesn't play tomorrow in Philadelphia, you would expect that he'll go Saturday against Columbus. And then that's 7 days between starts for a guy that's got 10 of your 14 wins. Like, I would go Schmid tomorrow. I'd go Carter Hart on Saturday. That's how I'd approach it. But, you know, the competitor in Carter Hart wants to play against his former team.
John Von Tobel, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. Ryan the Hockey Guy is with us. Some fan reaction on the Twitter sphere. Someone saying it's starting to look like every game is kind of a coin flip. It's only December, so it's not the end of the world, but that feeling will need to subside at some point because it's not what a cup contender looks like, talking about the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I mean, everything right now in the National Hockey League seems like a coin flip. You've got multiple teams that are – you know, in and around it in terms of playoffs and seeding. Like, just look at the Eastern Conference. Pretty much everybody is right around 500. And I'm not talking about, you know, the top of the divisions. I'm talking about literally every single team. Like, there is not much that separates teams in the Atlantic Division, the Metropolitan Division. And that is more or less just an influx of overtime games. I think that's kind of where it is. Now, do you need to create separation? Absolutely. Do you need to win every single game by multiple goals? No, you don't. But you have to be able to win different ways. And I think the Golden Knights early on in the season have proven that they can win in different ways. They can win higher scoring games. They can win lower scoring games. They can win games when they don't have their A game, like, you know, Chicago. That would be a game where I don't think they had their A game last night. I don't think they had their A game, but they were still right there. They do get a point. You grow as the year goes on. You get better, hopefully, month over month. And I think the Golden Knights are a better team now than when they started the year. And hopefully the overtime games kind of subside a bit and you can create some of that separation.
Fun topic. New York Times put this out. Only got 107 responses from the players. But NHL's most punchable player. Nick Cousins leads the way, 25%. Brad Marchand, about 20%. Kachuk, 10%. What do you think of those top three? And is there someone else where you're like, man, that person deserves a punch?
No, I think Nick Cousins is right on the money. He's a disturber. He is a guy that goes out there and he really tries to get under the skin of the opposition. That's kind of a rare thing in the National Hockey League these days. So I'm good with Cousins. I'm good with Brad Marchand. He's kind of the ultimate guy, right? Like, he's been around forever, and he is affectionately known as a rat. He loves it. So, but there's also like a part of me with Marchand in going to Florida and winning a Stanley Cup and what he's done there. It almost feels like it's softened a little bit. He's not the rat that we all have come to know and love. A little soft.
What's coming up on the show?
So we got John Penhallow. He's the president of business operations for the Golden Knights. He's going to join us around 4:20 to talk about some of the new hires on the business side of things for the Golden Knights. We'll also have Brian McCormick, the voice of the Henderson Silver Knights, join us in the 5 o'clock hour to just get a lay of the land of what's going on with Henderson.
All right, Ryan. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
Up next, an update on old man Rivers. Man, he sounds like he's going to come in and throw 5 touchdowns this weekend. I don't think that's the case.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So Montobel's in ESPN Las Vegas. He is the resident old man in the company. What a season they were having. What a season. And it all changes that quickly. Danny Dimes, Achilles, they don't really have a backup on the roster. The backup they have, now he's iffy. Do we have an update on Riley Leonard? What's the status?
There we go. He practiced in full, so it sounds like. And they released their depth chart yesterday. Philip Rivers is not there. I believe still technically he has not been signed to the active roster also.
Right, it was practice squad.
So right now it would seem that your QB depth chart against Seattle is Riley Leonard and Brett Rypien at this point.
Right, which I'm going to say is fine. It's not.
Right.
But it's not Philip Rivers. Because this whole thing is kind of ridiculous. I saw Big Roost, Diana Rossini. She's not big. She's little. That's a joke. Big personality. She had tweeted something out about Rivers being in the best shape he's been in.
A source close to Philip Rivers says that he's even in better shape than when he stopped playing.
That's not possible. I guess it is possible because, I don't know, if I want to go like deep divey on the Chargers, like Nick Hardwick.
Right.
Is in better shape now than he was when he played. He can't play center in the NFL because he's like 45 years old. He also weighs 220. I'm sorry. I don't buy that Philip Rivers is in the best shape. He's been even better than when he played. I also don't really take a whole lot out of J.J. Watt tweeted out yesterday, you know, after meetings that, Philip Rivers is running the same Colts offense with his kid's high school team. Gunner is a big quarterback prospect. They're running the Colts offense. And Steichen and Philip talk a lot about that offense. Okay, we're good.
Now, I will say in defense of that, remember Steichen was his quarterback coach in his last 2 years with the Chargers. So, like, maybe there is at least some sort of mental connection as to how you want to run an offense. I don't know. But, like, there's something there at the very least. And the relationship is longstanding enough that maybe mentally – Philip Rivers, a longtime quarterback, could be fine from an execution, memorization, and play calling standpoint. Having said that, and as I said this today, once the ball is snapped, everything changes. You have to be able to throw the football. You have to be able to move in the pocket. They asked him today, I don't know if you saw the press conference, he had his first media availability, and he was asked, like, hey, what's your current weight? And he goes, I don't know. And then the whole media room was like, ha, 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 it's hilarious. And, oh, they were all laughing. Like, it was the funniest joke in the world. And as a Colts fan, I'm like, it's not funny. Like, this guy might start games. I understand that he, like, used to be a – he was never a mobile quarterback. But there has to be an ability to step up in the pocket, to evade some sort of pressure. Steve, his next, the next four games for the Indianapolis Colts, not in this order, I don't think, Seahawks, 49ers, Jaguars, and Texans. Three of those teams are some of the best pass-rushing teams in the NFL.
Right.
In Jacksonville, Seattle, and Houston. Seattle and Houston are, like, elite pass-rushing teams. You have to be able to move a little bit. I don't need you to scramble, but I need pocket mobility. Unless you're getting the ball out in less than 2 seconds, how in the world is this going to look? And by the way, saw a couple of throws during practice. Not exactly frozen ropes when he's throwing them downfield. I think this is a joke, dude. I don't think it's serious.
Well, I think that's how we have to take it. I think everyone who's going to – people are going to roll with this as if this is reality and he's going to play. He's not going to play. If Leonard doesn't play, then it's going to be Brett Rypien. And if both of those guys aren't available – now, it's getting late in the week, but – if Rypien were to get hurt and Leonard was out for a long period of time, they'll go get another quarterback. He's being brought in as a mentor, a coach of sorts, the ultimate insurance policy. He's not playing.
He can't. I just there's I keep seeing what the weird part about it is the media messaging. And I'm assuming some of this is like Rivers people they're talking to, which is like, no, like he's Jeff Saturday had some quote, like, no, he's being brought in to save the season. It's like, I don't know. I understand that you were brought in, Jeff, at a weird point in the Colts' history, to coach some games near the end of a season. This is not that.
It's also not a clown organization anymore. And I guess rest in peace, Ursay, but the daughter takes it a lot more seriously. They have, you know, front office, real GM.
It's funny
they're
you
not,
say that.
They're not tanking the season with guys like, and I don't mean tanking for a draft pick. They're with all the great players on this team, they all deserve to have a quarterback who's somewhere under 38 years old.
It's funny you say that because that's what was my first thought was, the new Ursay, it seems to be so much better at running a business that there's no way she would give this a green light in terms of, look, go ahead and sign him, whatever. Bring him on the roster if you feel like young quarterback Riley Leonard and Brett Rypien need some sort of tutelage, some rearing. But there is no way in hell I am allowing my multi-million, multi-billion dollar franchise to be turned over to a 44-year-old fat grandfather.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
That time of the week for our LA report. Arash Markazi from the Sporting Tribune is up with John Von Tobel and Cofield. Arash, what's up, buddy?
Not much. Just living the dream in Los Angeles.
What are you doing? Living the dream? It sounds like you're driving. That sounds like not living the dream in LA.
Yeah, in traffic, but I thought I'd get there early. I'm doing a pregame with the Jim Hill, Los Angeles legend, getting ready for the Lakers-Spurs NBA Cup quarterfinals. If the Lakers win, I am heading to Las Vegas.
All right, must be nice. Must be nice to travel to Vegas, your second town, making appearances with the legendary Jim Hill. I was just laughing during the break at your retweet a couple days ago of your appearance on CNN's The Story Is, and I'm reading down the list. I'm like, okay, Brandi Chastain, Phil Rosenthal, I love that guy, Sammy Hagar, Andrea Bocelli, Arash Markazi's on with Mark Medina. You were talking basketball on CNN again.
Yeah, listen, I mean, a heck of a follow there. You got Andrea Bocelli and then me, so... talking about JVT's Clippers and Chris Paul, that whole fiasco.
Well, let's get to basketball in a couple minutes. I want to talk about the Chargers a little bit and the scene with the Eagles. How crazy was that game, and how much of a takeover was there? Because we always like to track the progress of Chargers fans holding out the opposition. Raiders fans really didn't show up. It sounded like Eagles fans were there.
Since the Chargers have come back, they've actually played them a few times. That and the Steelers, I think you could put the Packers and Cowboys in that mix. I mean, those are the biggest takeovers. I mean, that was 70% green. That was a lot of Eagle fans there. They showed up at the Santa Monica Pier on Sunday before the game on Monday night. So, yeah, I mean, there was a ton of Eagle fans there. But the Chargers at this point, whether it's good or not or whatever, I mean, they're used to it. So it wasn't a big ordeal for them. For these particular games, they do practice with crowd noise and silent count and things like that. So it was an ugly game, but the Chargers found a way to come out with a win.
Did J.J. Redick, the Lakers coach, have a Chargers take on the Monday Night Football game?
Well, so he's an Eagles fan, so he was out there with his son and, you know, obviously not happy with the result. But he's done a great job of connecting with the coaches here locally. He has a good relationship with Sean McVay. I believe he's met with Jim Harbaugh. Just talking about how to connect with players now. So, again, they don't talk schematics, but, like, you know, how do you relate? Talk about connecting with players in their 20s. So that was cool.
Did he talk about how he's going to figure out how to make LeBron James not look like an old man tonight? What's going on here?
He didn't touch on that specifically, but they are basically trying to figure out, you know, what's everyone's role on this team. Clearly, and again, I would have been shocked if you would have told me this at the beginning of the season, that LeBron James is the third option for the Lakers, and they are still one of the top three teams in the league. So I do think LeBron, there are moments when he embraces it. When they came back to beat the Sixers on the road, he looked good in that role as the facilitator, finding a way to make the big shot. But this is still a work in progress, very much so. But it's been fun to watch, actually. And again, kind of bummed to tonight. We won't see Victor Wembanyama, but Spurs, Lakers, I mean, the Spurs have had a tremendous start to the year, too.
Do you get the sense that LeBron would be willing? Like, I know you mentioned a couple of the moments. The Toronto game comes to mind where he passes up the 10th point for the game-winning bucket. Would he be willing to be the third guy, do you think?
You know what? I don't think he loves it. He has not really, like, outwardly talked about, like, not being a fan of it. But, I mean, listen, I mean, this is like LeBron James. I think he came into the year knowing that this was Luka's team. So at some point he would have to be comfortable for the first time in his career with it not being his team and being the number two guy. I don't think he was prepared when he came back that he is very much clearly the third guy. And if you just look at the numbers, I mean, this combo of Luka and Reeves has been a historic duo. I mean, they're putting up numbers, points per game, that we've not seen since Kobe and Shaq.
Arash Markazi is with us, the Sporting Tribune. He does Sporting Trib Live. That's Sunday to Thursday. I know you guys were very fired up yesterday to talk about the Dodgers and fixing a major, major problem. The bullpen last year, we all know it was a freaking nightmare, and boy, oh boy, did they fix it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team in the Dodgers that blew 27 saves a year ago. They were four wins shy of having the best record in baseball. So, listen, yes, they are the back-to-back World Series champions, but they did have to go in as a wild card team. They did have to go on the road, didn't have home field advantage in the division series and the championship series, and obviously played game 6 and 7 of the World Series in Toronto. So what do? They get the best closer in the game, certainly the best closer available, but Edwin Diaz, you know, three-time reliever of the year, had an amazing season with the Mets. So, listen, I mean, this was a need for them. They thought that they could maybe fix it within. They don't have to. They got the best reliever in the baseball.
Let's talk a little college football and the USC matchup now, because there was a great matchup on tap, maybe not so hot on paper. What do you think about the USC bowl game now?
Well, I mean, so the issue is, and again, these bowl games are, I don't know how much life they have left in terms of, you know, if they expand the playoff. I mean, more and more we've seen teams that if they're not in the playoff, they don't want to play in these bowl games. But we had an opportunity maybe to see BYU, USC in San Antonio, two top 16 teams. BYU, I believe they got passed up. And so now we get Texas Christian, TCU versus USC. So the ninth ranked team in the Big 12, like they're not a top 25 team. So with me being a USC fan, I was actually looking forward to seeing USC against BYU. This TCU matchup, not as exciting. But I totally understand. When they're picking these teams, they're looking at who's going to travel, who's going to drink, who's going to go out and have a good time. And quite frankly, for a variety of reasons, they did not believe that BYU was going to be that team.
Right, especially the drinking part. The Alamo Bowl, yes, coming up on December 30th. Okay. Will Lincoln Riley be the coach? What if Michigan, I don't know if you saw this, Arash, but Michigan fired Sherrone Moore. What if Michigan comes calling and says, hey, Link, we want you. Doesn't Lincoln Riley take the Michigan job?
Listen, it's up to Lincoln. I think at the end of the day, USC is a private school, but I've heard from a variety of sources. I mean, he basically got somewhere in the line of a 10-year, $100 million contract. So you kind of know what he's making per year. He's got a beautiful view right next to the beach in Los Angeles. So I don't know if he would leave that to go to Michigan. It's certainly one of the premier jobs in the country, no doubt about that. So, listen, that is a huge job out there that was not available a couple of days ago or even yesterday or this morning. So my guess, guys, is that he doesn't leave. I do think USC having the number one recruiting class in the country next year, they do have a chance to be a playoff team. So I do think Lincoln wants to see this out.
All right, so Indiana is going to play in the Rose Bowl against the winner of Oklahoma-Alabama. Does Indiana-Oklahoma do anything for you in a Rose Bowl setting?
Not so much in a Rose Bowl, but I touched on this a couple of years ago when they had basically reduced the Rose Bowl to what it is, where the Rose Bowl wants to play their game, obviously, always on January 1st. And if that's the case, the Rose Bowl is stuck being a quarterfinal game. So you don't get the pomp and the pageantry. I mean, that it was in the last college game, by the way, that Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh coached against each other. So it was, and we all kind of wrote that this is the last quote-unquote Rose Bowl week with the day at Disneyland and the Lowry's Beef Bowl and all that stuff. Those days are gone. This is just a quarterfinal game because for one of these teams, they played the previous week. As soon as that game is over, if you want to hand me the trophy, great, but this is not the trophy that we're playing for. We got to get ready for the semifinal next week, and after that, if they win, we got to get ready for the championship game. So I still love the Rose Bowl as someone who grew up in Los Angeles. It still means something to me, but they've kind of killed it being sort of the end of the road, the goal of a team.
World Cup news in, and Iran is going to play two games at SoFi. I only know this, because I talked to you, and also I was a big fan of the Shahs of Sunset, and we also know Lotus Broadcasting has a Persian station with programming that is a massive deal for LA and the Iranians how many people are going to show up? We're talking like 40,000 plus Iranians and fans of that country to go to the game.
No doubt about it. Listen, I mean, it was funny that a lot of folks had not heard of this nickname, but it is Irangelis or Terangelis. It is the largest Iranian population outside of Iran that lives in Los Angeles. So, listen, there's a lot of stuff happening politically with Iran. Obviously, there's a lot of people who are in Los Angeles who don't agree with the politics and what's happening with the current regime. All that being said, they are going to root for Iran. The majority of them, at least certainly the ones that I've talked to, are going to root for them. So to have two Iran games, World Cup games, being at SoFi Stadium in Iran, they're going to open up a panini kebab cafe. This was already in the works right next to SoFi Stadium. So I told them, hey, guys, I don't know when you're planning to have the grand opening, but it better be before June because that place is going to be packed.
You better get your guy Ike to start doing a kebab sub or something.
That's right, exactly.
A Rosh sandwich number two. All right, Rosh, be careful. Enjoy the game tonight, and go Lakers. Hope to see you soon in Vegas.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you soon.
Should I not be rooting for
the
Lakers?
I don't condone the first statement.
Which part?
Go Lakers, but be safe.
Well.
Also,
I live in a Laker household, so I kind of.
If you wanted to give me some more of those Ike sandwiches like you did last year at the Super Bowl, I'll be down. Those are very good.
I had a lot of those. They
he literally just had piles of them. They were all around him.
Yes. And when you're, this is a first world problem, but when you go to the Super Bowl, you are kind of locked into that place. And there's not, believe it or not, there's not a lot of food options at the convention centers. for these Super Bowls. So I have no idea what the hell is going to go on in Santa Clara, San Francisco, but you're stuck there for a long time. So you're like, a couple of subs or nine? Let's go.
Let's do it. Put them in your pockets. Ready to go.
You questioned if the Lakers were the number three team in the West.
No, he said the league.
Oh, the league. Okay.
Yes.
That's a little shaky. Are NBA people kind of blown away by the fact that Luka and Reeves are averaging, what are they at, 65 points a game?
Right. I mean, I think
that Reeves is this good?
That.
Bring back the bus boys!
For those who haven't seen.
They're the ones who scouted. This is nuts!
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, you go back to, especially in the games in which Luka doesn't play, it's nuts. I mean, the other night against Toronto, he goes absolutely insane. Does it again the next night when Luka's gone for the birth of his second daughter. It's ridiculous what Reeves can do. I think the question that you ask about them, they're 16-5 right now, somewhere in that range, and they have a point differential of plus 2.2. That big picture is not a sign of good things to come. If you look at clutch games, so games within 5 points, five or fewer minutes left to go, they're 8-0 in clutch games so far this year. Again, something that should be a little bit more volatile is a basketball game in the final 5 minutes. You shouldn't be able to win those 5 minutes as consistently as the Lakers have. Eight games is still a small sample size, but to be undefeated in those, to have a minuscule point differential the way they do, but have the record they do, those are all signs of overperforming and performing beyond, or your record being beyond what your actual statistical body of work would represent.
Has anyone done a piece on why Reeves has jumped to this level?
Not really.
I'm really curious. Like, what do you see?
I mean, what's interesting is he's multifaceted. It's all three levels. He can shoot. He can get to the dit. Like, he can drive really well. He actually, when he's got the ball in his hands, he can be the main facilitator. In those games without Luka, you know, to bring it to like a betting perspective, points and assists is one of those props that if Luka's out, and there's only been about four or five games now so far this year, he blows by those numbers. It's incredible what he's able to do. I think development on his own is part of it. I think J.J. Redick does help. I think Redick's proven to be a pretty good coach, but it's not like this ascension didn't start before J.J. Redick. I mean, we knew this was kind of coming. He's just really taking a next step.
You know what would be a great roundtable is to sit down with coaches, college basketball coaches who had a kid, and then he went on to the NBA and then just exploded. Like, Dean Smith's not alive anymore, but like Dean Smith on Jordan. Because a lot of people are like, hey, the only person who could stop Michael Jordan was Dean Smith. I was just thinking back to Austin Reeves in college, and like, he was good.
Right.
But the way he is now, like Oklahoma should have been in competition for a national title. Their roster, and this was Lon Kruger's team, their roster back then was actually Victor Wakor, who wound up at UNLV, Jalen Hill, who wound up at UNLV, Devon Harmon, who bounced around, but a very good player, Reeves, who else? They had another really good player on this roster. Oh, Elijah Harkless, who also wound up at UNLV.
Harkless.
Okay, so they weren't unbelievably loaded, but a pretty good team. I just wonder what the difference has been.
Sure.
From college, where I think we all knew he was a solid player, but like most of the NBA didn't hold him in high regard. Obviously, he wouldn't have landed with the Lakers if they did.
No, of course not. He would have been drafted high.
Holy crap.
I know it happens in sports all the time, but at the same time, it's incredible to see this leap. Like, guys will go to college, have okay careers, and then be good. To take off to be potentially a cornerstone of a franchise that if he leaves the Lakers, any team would sign up to get him is shocking.